On this episode of Mechs and Men, Noten has a double date, Hans has to deal with family drama, and Justin's got a good doctor, but what he really needs now is a good lawyer. This is Of Mechs and Men. I am Kanan Hill, joined, as usual, by my two good friends, Brent.
It's me, Brent.
And Aaron.
It's me, Aaron.
How we doing, boys?
Well, it's all grapes to me.
That's great, because we'll be plucking our way through chapters 5 through 9 of the book we've been working through.
Warrior On Guard by Michael A. Stackpole.
Let's get into it.
Chapter 5. Solara 7. Rainshear. Lowering Commonwealth, 15th of January, 3027. So, this is Solara 7. That's cool, right? We know what Solara 7 is. Everyone knows what Solara 7 is. So, this is exciting.
What if we don't?
What if we don't? Hold on. Now, before we get into that, I also wanted to point out that this does take place on the same day as the last chapter from the last episode, the one with Dan Allard and Patrick Kelly. He's at the officers' meeting and whatnot. I just thought that was interesting. This takes place on the same day, 15th of January. But now we're on Solara 7.
So, Solara 7, it's a game world. It is in the Lyran Commonwealth on the Lyran-Merrick border. And it's kind of divided between the great houses because everyone comes here to fight. There's kind of this agreement that everyone's going to take part in these gladiatorial fights.
That's true. It's like gladiators, but they're mechs. That's true.
They're mechs.
What he said. It's awesome.
And betting.
It's like
and
a sport, partying. Right? It's like a professional sport, right? It's Solara 7, dude. It's the game world.
The Las Vegas planet.
Yeah, it's cool. It's so cyberpunky, right? It's so, I love this. It's so gritty.
I am excited that we're here because I think anybody that spent any time in MechWarrior 4 takes their trip to Solaris. And for me, it was definitely like one of my favorite parts of the game. Going through, you got Duncan Fisher in there announcing it. It's just amazing.
Speaking of Solaris, I do want to shout out just recently, Catalyst Games Labs released a new beginner box called Battletech Essentials. You can find it at a Target near you, and it literally is kind of a setup for doing 1v1 Solaris fights, and it comes with two characters that we're going to be talking about really shortly.
One we're going to be talking about here within the next couple minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we're on Solara 7. Right. We open, we see this car. It's driving down the street. We can tell that the streets are very like debris strewn. It's very cyberpunk. I feel like it's always cloudy and stormy, dark shadows hiding alleys and doorways. It says that pedestrian scrambling out of the light. It's so like heavy metal. It's cool. And so we're watching this car, right? This like ground car. It's like a hover vehicle, right? Isn't it? It doesn't, I think they say that. Is it like a hovercraft? No, it is. Yeah, on a whispering cushion of air. It is. Yeah, it is. It's like a sick, that's why it's expensive. They mentioned that Noten's whip is like expensive. He's got a hover car. It's sick, but they say it's like quiet too. Right away, you're like, oh, this thing's cold. He's got this like hovercraft, right? The Typhoon. We learned shortly that it's a Typhoon. You're like, oh, cool, dude. So we're in the Typhoon, and it says we're crossing the no man's land between Cathay and Cilicia. And that's the Capellan and the Lyran quarters of Solaris City, right? And so we're like, oh, like Brent said, the city is like divided into these districts, right? It's this little microcosm of the inner sphere. Everyone's here. They all have their own like little town on Solara 7. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So the car pulls up, right? It's like you see it pull up to like this place. You know, it's like some building.
A gull wing door opens on the driver's side. A gull wing.
Gull wing door. Yeah. 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 Stepping quickly into the rain slicked street, dude. This rules. I was like, yes. It says that he keeps the light off so he can't be silhouetted by a sniper.
You can just see the like blinding neon.
So this car pulls up to this building. This man gets out, right? He goes inside. There's like, I think it's like the coat room. It's like a nice place. And he like goes in, he like gives the girl his coat and he tips her with a C-bill, a 10 spot. And I only say this because there's this whole bit where she's like, oh, thank you, Mr. Noton. And you're like, okay, so this is Mr. Noton, N-O-T-O-N. And, oh, you know, I did want to say Noton is palindromic. Did you guys see that? Isn't that interesting? N-O-T-O-N. I just wanted to point it out. Same thing backwards. I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, so you're like, all right, so this is Mr. Noton.
There is an interesting bit of lore here. I'd forgotten about this, and it's interesting. He hands her a 10 C-bill tip.
Yeah.
And she's just like, oh my gosh. Like,
it's a C-bill. Comstar bills.
And apparently she could barely believe that she was getting a tip in Comstar bills. Most of her tips are in house bills or Solaris script, and the latter being some form of underground currency, right? That's used for betting and other nefarious activities. So we see that like the C bill is an elevated form of payment. I thought that was interesting, at least.
Good. Yeah. He's got C bills, right? He pulls up in the Typhoon. He's dropping C bills. It's awesome. Like, oh, thank you, Mr. Noton.
And he's like, it's real, child. It's real, child.
Noton turned from her, straightened his double-breasted blue satin shirt, fastened the last two buttons to the left shoulder. It says here, he's like tightening his shirt up, and he even has a moment where he's like, he notices he's like been getting like a little fatter, and he's like, oh man, he's like got to tighten it up. Because he's like, I got to dress like a mech warrior. The paramilitary dress, all mech warriors favored. I'm like, I don't know about all mech warriors. But I mean, most of them. Yeah. I mean, come on, you know, stereotype for a reason. Mech warriors. Yeah. So we learned. So this is Gray Noton. He pulled up. He's going in this place. He's strutting. There's like a doorman and he knows him. He's like, oh, welcome back to Thor's Shield Hall, Mr. Noton. There's someone waiting for you up in Valhalla, but Mr. Shang hoped you would have a moment for him. He's down in Midgard back watching the matches. And you're like, oh, okay. And Gray Newton's like, oh, a guy waiting for me, huh? He's like, oh, thank you, Roger. And he slips him a 20, also a C-bill.
We're going to see a lot of Norse mythology symbolism. Midgard being roughly translating into like middle place, as in Midgard is often represented as Earth, as in like the plane of existence we live in. And then there's someone waiting for you in Valhalla. Valhalla in Norse mythology being a form of what like Westerners would consider heaven, though not really. It roughly translates to the halls of the valiant, in which the dead who die in battle go to live out the rest of their time continuing to fight daily and then feasting at the end of the day and doing this repetitively for the end of their existence, until literally time ends. I think this is done by Stackpole as a bit of a tongue-in-cheek gesture, right?
Yeah.
Valhalla's kind of a bittersweet place, and you will see in the following paragraphs here that Noton has this feeling about Valhalla Club, that it is indeed this bittersweet realm.
Yeah, he is kind of cheeky with it. What you said, yes, Noton himself sees the humor in it, I think he says, shortly. Because, oh, but right now, okay, I wanted to say, I love this scene where he walks up and he's talking to the doorman. Clearly they have like some relationship and he like slides him the 20. He asked him, does Shang know that I'm already meeting someone else here? And that's when he slides in the money. And Roger's like, I didn't tell him, but he is resourceful, as you know. He just came in. He said he'd be watching the fights. He does say, he's like, I offered him a room in Valhalla, but he declined. He wanted to be down here. And Noten's like, okay, cool. And he takes a moment to himself. He's like, if Shane can guess that you'd be here on your first night back, you become too predictable, Gray. Get it together. We got a real rogue here. And you're like, oh, this guy's cool. You just know he's got like a cool jacket. So Noten goes into the club, right? Midgard, which is like, we learn it's this like lower level of the club. It's like the actual exclusive club is the Valhalla Club, right? But we learn that like Midgard is like anyone can come here. If you can figure out where this place is, you know, you can pay the cover charge and drink overpriced drinks or whatever, and like maybe catch a glimpse of like some famous mech warriors or something. So it's like this kind of seedier kind of, it says there's like neon and phosphorus. You feel like there's music like doom, 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 like, you know, and all this. It's like, it's sick, you know, and he's just like, we're just like slow-mo, like walking through the nightclub. You know what I mean? You see people like smoking. There's like embers of cigarettes and stuff. I was like, dude, this is tight. This is tight. We're doing this whole like cyberpunk bounty hunter thing going on. Whatever. You're like, what's up? This rules. You're like, I was like, this is so cool.
And I love how Stackpole has flavored this in that style.
Yeah. Noten's making his way through Midgard. He's trying to find Sen Shang's table. This is where he does think about Valhalla. Valhalla, Hall of Slain Warriors. He like explains this further a little bit later, but he even touches on it here. We get this little bit where he's like kind of laughing to himself, like, what a joke. Kind of, you're right. He's like a little bit flippant about Valhalla. Even this little bit right here, he has to get it in where he's like, Valhalla, whatever. And he's kind of thinking to himself about how the Valhalla Club also, it includes a lot of nobles, right? It's like, yeah, it's like the mech warriors, but it's also a lot of nobles because actually it's the nobles who control all the money. They're the ones who own the mechs. They talk about like stabling, how like rich people, they have these mech stables and they hire these mech warriors. And you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. So he's like, Valhalla Club is like mostly rich people. And then like, they're like stable, like, you know, prize fighter kind of mech warrior situation going on. So like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool.
Stables are a big portion. We're not going to get too much into them right now, but they definitely a very important partition of what makes up Solaris.
Yeah, there's a whole system here. Solaris is cool, man. I really like it. Really is this whole world. Like Solaris 7 is like a whole thing.
It's a great place if you're playing Battletech and you want to have like a little campaign or something. It's kind of a good starting location.
Totally. Yeah, it does say the owner operators. He has a line where he's thinking about the little guys and who own the light mechs, right? You can totally, yeah. Those are cool stories. Just being a guy with a stinger.
Get your one fight in.
Yeah.
Put out to pasture in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the guy and his stinger.
Seat rinsed, sold to the next guy who's stupid enough to
get in a stinger.
Totally. He makes his way over to this guy's booth, right? We pull up, we see this guy, and he's like, take a seat. Oh, it does say specifically, he doesn't shake his hand, bows his head. He's like, I know better than to shake his hand. Disrespectful. Bows his head because this guy, right, we learn right away, he is Capellan. We have this man, Sen Shang. It's probably definitely Shang. Sen Shang. I'm going to say that. Advice at heat.management. Help me out. I'm not sure. I think the E, it might be Sun Shang. I'm going to say Sen for now. Anyway, so he sits down with this guy, right? And right away, I think it's funny. Gray's looking at this dude. And the first thing he talks about is like his fingernails. Gray can't stand this dude's fingernails. I think the waitress comes over and they're like ordering. And Gray's just looking at this dude's hand because he's like, he's grown out the fingernails on the last three fingers on each hand to a length of 10 centimeters, right? And they're like decorated with gems and gold leaf and stuff. Gray's watching him. And he's like, this is so silly. He's like, he says like foppish. He's like, he looks like such a dandy with these like little fingernails. He thinks they're so dumb. So this guy, he's like this Capellan noble, right? He has battle mechs that compete in the arena. It's like this thing, but Gray's sitting there. He's thinking about it. He also knows like all of this is kind of a cover because he actually works for the Capellan secret police, the Maskarovka, right? They're like, actually, this whole thing is like, he's thinking to himself. He's like, he's a customer.
The Capellans have a secret police? No way.
Yeah. the Mask Ravka. He has a bunch of agents here and stuff too. You know, he has a bunch of guys, spies and whatnot. He's like the spy, basically. Oh, right. This is interesting. So the waitress comes up. First, Shang orders for them. He's like, oh, let me get a plum wine for me and a PPC for my companion, which is funny. It's like PPC, like the weapon, but it's like, oh, it's the name of like a cocktail. That's funny, right? I like that. And then, oh, but right, Brent, this is Gray Notin. He's like, no, I want a beer. Timbihi Dark.
There's something interesting here, though. I don't think it's just a change in preference. I mean, judging from the way Stackpole has handled everything else, my hunch is that this is Mr. Notin being a bit wise and knowing the skullduggery nature of Mr. Shang and a concern for maybe being poisoned by a pre-poured drink. It would have came off like he was like, oh, I know what you like,
my friend. Yeah,
but instead,
point. Change the order.
Exactly.
Yeah, that does, yeah, always change the order.
And so he changes it to something that's probably either on tap or in a bottle that it's completely safe. And I think it's like, it's a nice little bit of world building here.
I buy it. I like this. Totally. Yeah. Good. I didn't think about that. Good point.
I felt it was very similar to that. Like he was taking that step and then also kind of asserting that like, no, I'm independent here.
Right.
Like you're not ordering for me. You're not telling me what I am.
It's a move on multiple planes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's playing that Star Trek chess.
Yes. So they order the drinks and Shang also orders another bowl of kincha fruit. So the waitress is like, cool. And she leaves. And then Shang congratulates Gray on the mission. And then, okay, this is interesting, right? We see Gray Notin says, congratulations, that mission blew up in our faces. Your superior sent me out to bag a training cadre, but all I did was destroy a Valkyrie. That mech warrior was good. And you're like, oh, this is the rifleman pilot.
It's the rifleman pilot.
This is the rifleman pilot. I was like, oh, interesting. Let's go. I was like, haha, you know, I was like, yes, very good. This guy is the rifleman pilot. And you're like, oh, he's like this mercenary, this like operator. How cool is this? And now we're on the game world, dude. And he's in like a nightclub. And you're like, yes, exactly. Like
you're about to learn that he's here to collect payment, which I think also makes him even more wary about being poisoned from the previous scene because he's completed a job.
And I love how Stackpole took all of this, everything leading up to this in this chapter to kind of set the stage just to like throw it out there to you right away. Like, here's how this all ties together. This is our guy that took down Justin.
Yeah.
So you immediately like, oh, what's the angle here? And it just makes you want to know where this is going with Gray.
Yeah, dude. It's okay. So he's like, yeah, that mech warrior was good. And Shang's like, indeed. And the waitress comes back, right? And she puts, there's like a bowl of the kincha fruit, which I now see it. It's like a little nectarine, kind of like a small citrus fruit, I think. It says he lifted a kincha. And he cuts it open with his fingernails, though. I wanted to point that out. He's like, the Valkyrie's pilot was none other than Major Justin Allard. And Notin's like, oh, that's the Allard that Capet speaks of so often. No wonder he fears him. Capet's not bad, but Allard is better. And you're like, Capet? That's like Philip Capet, right? That's like the Fed Son's hero that...
Yep, Allard kicked out.
Yes. Yes, it's all connected. I'm like, it's all connected. I see.
You're getting the red string out.
Getting Charlie in the mailroom energy.
Yes, but Shang tells him, he's like, oh, no, well, he's not dead. You should know that, according to agents on Kittery, you just blew off his left forearm. He's still alive, but he won't pilot a mech again. And Notin's like very upset. He's like, oh, no, if I'd known that, I would have just killed him. That's so sad. Again, this is reinforced. We've talked about this with the scene with the Kellhounds. It's like a fate worse than death kind of a situation.
You spend all this time and or money becoming a mech warrior, and then for it to all be over because of an injury, it's a rough ticket. And clearly even Notin here feels guilty about not going all in.
Yeah.
And I love how Stackpole takes that moment and in that line to kind of solidify the idea of like some mech warriors have that storied reputation that World War II fighter pilots would have, where it's like they respected each other, even though they might not be on the same side, they're fighting against each other. There was a respect about it. And he's taking that through and through of like, oh, you know, if I couldn't pilot, I'd wish the other guy would kill me.
I think the word we're searching for here is honor, right? Yeah. Like this guy, he might be a mercenary, but even he is like, I wouldn't intentionally do this to another warrior.
It's a matter of honor.
It's a matter of honor.
Oh, yes. He's upset that he didn't kill him. And also, we get this little paragraph here. Gray is watching Sen Shong eat the kensha fruit, right? So we get this whole paragraph where he's like, he sees Shong, he's lost in the pleasure of tasting the kensha. And you realize, oh, he's talking about his like addiction to kensha marks you as one of Lao's lost legion. You disgraced yourselves when you lost Shen Wan to Merrick. Do you forget what it is to be a mech warrior because you wish to forget losing the Kinsha's homeworld? And you're like, oh, wow, there's like a whole story like right here. It's like, I just wanted to point out.
Tell him the like, fruit.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, so he was a mech warrior, but he lost the planet that the Kinsha is from. And also the Kinsha appears to have drug-like properties. And he's now become like addicted to it. And he's like cutting it open with his fingernails. And you're like, God, okay, you know, I'm following along. I'm just nodding along like, Lost Legion, got it, you know, like Kensha fruit. Absolutely. And, you know, Shang's like, I've arranged for your payment. And he pulls the envelope out and like slides it across the table.
Noten makes sure to not look directly at it and to give it a moment before opening it.
It says that. Yeah, it's true. I did appreciate. He's like, he doesn't look at it.
These are all smooth operators here.
Yeah.
And Stackpole wants you to know.
This isn't their first time. This is just business as usual.
However, I do want to say this scene contrasts a coming scene. Even though they're kind of playing cat and mouse with each other, there's a bit of a respect. Both men feel as though like the other could cause the other's death, right? There's this like, we're not taking any chances with each other. And I just wanted to bring that up only because in the next meeting that Noten is going to take place in, that does not feel to be the case. But we'll get there in a moment.
No, even if anything, there's like, I don't know, Noten seems he kind of doesn't like this guy, right? If he's going to be honest with you, he's like, I don't like this guy. You know, I work with him. I don't like him, but whatever.
It doesn't appear that he likes him.
It's business.
He's sitting next to another warrior, right? Like he treats him like so.
Yeah.
Which is with the proper amount of expectations of jaggy edges.
So Gray Noten realizes that what Shang gave him is a betting ticket, right? He looks down like Steiner Stadium, fifth fight. Oh, you fixed a fight with Philip Capet? And they're like, he's in his rifleman. And you're like, all right. And he'll be fighting these two Capellan brothers, right? He says that, yeah, he's in his rifleman. He'll be fighting the Teng brothers. They'll both be in Vindicators. And your bet is that he'll leave Fa Teng alive. Okay, so like as payment, he gives them this like betting ticket for a fixed fight, right? And Noten's like, you fixed a fight with Capet. How are you going to get Capet to lose? And it's like, oh no, he's not going to lose. He's like, basically you realize, oh, he's betting that one of the brothers will die. And Noten's like, oh, Ji Tang will die? And then, yeah, Shang tells him, he's like, yes, he has disgraced his ancestors, who 200 years ago made the Vindicator a mech to be feared. He knows it is time to die. And you're like, oh, God. Even like Noten's like, oh, that's crazy. He's like, oh, really? Won't that affect how he fights? Question mark. And Shang like flicks the Kensha pit and he's like, he's been told he will die in the rematch. So it's like, oh, he doesn't even actually know. It's like a whole setup type of a situation. But Gray's like, well, I guess, I mean, they're Maskarovka too. They're like his agents. So, I mean, they have to follow his orders. Like all of the Capellans are all, they're Capellans.
Wards of the state and whatnot.
He gets this ticket for this fight. Basically, the bet is he's going to get paid out. It's very valuable because one of the brothers will die. And then like the bet, he'll like make a bunch of money on it. And you're like, oh, okay.
I don't know if everyone listening to this is going to understand how this kind of gambling works. And I'll be honest, I don't even think by any means I'm an expert. However, basically the more specific a bet is, usually the better of the payout.
Right.
And so this is a very specific event to take place. So it's very likely the pay is going to be quite worth his while.
Yes, exactly. Oh, and Gray asked him if there's something that he wanted him to do. And Shang thinks and he says, so the mech warrior who organized the defense on Kittery while you fought Major Allard is Lieutenant Andrew Redburn. And you're like, oh, Andy, keep your eyes and ears open and let me know anything you're able to learn about him. And you're like, oh, man. I love this. It's like, no, not Andy. He drinks his beer, but he doesn't drink. He specifically just like drinks a little bit of it, right? He leaves most of it. And okay, all right. Here at the end of the chapter, right, we get this scene where Gray, he doesn't drink all of his beer. He takes a sip of it. He puts it back down. Okay. He sees that Sean like looks at it for a second, like kind of like impressed. And we get this little bit. Gray thinks to himself, he's like, yes, there's a Capellan tradition where if you order something expensive to be wasteful or like excessive, right? To order something expensive, but to not even partake is a sign of wealth or like prosperity, right? And so that's why he specifically did it just to impress Shang.
He orders this import beer and then doesn't finish it.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Like you said, he doesn't like this guy.
Yeah. He says that. You will respect me for what I do. Well, I find your action laughable.
He's a warrior. He doesn't respect this like level of skullduggery.
No.
He's willing to partake for a price. That's what we learn about Noten here in this bit of text. He's mercenary.
Yeah. He gets up and like saying just like, again, Gray, I offer you the praise of House Lao for your mission. I look forward to working with you in the future. And he's like, and I with you. And he like disappears back into the club.
Back into the shadows.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. We get this whole like dialogue scene like with this dude. It's sick. The car pulling up, like walking through the club, talking to the doorman. This chapter was awesome. I love this.
I think it's interesting because we have this like Gray Noten. And he's clearly well off from doing these hits and these jobs, but he doesn't appear to be enjoying that lifestyle at all, right? He's got this nice car, but like he's coming in and they talk about how like the lights don't even come on because he doesn't want to get silhouetted. He's worried about a sniper killing him.
Yeah.
And so like he's not even getting, he walks through this expensive club where he could probably have a good time, but instead he's like straight to business and straight to getting more money. He hates the men he's dealing with. Gray Noten is clearly a man who is unhappy with where he is amongst the stars and the course that his life has taken. And we're going to get more of that here as we move on. But I think it's already kind of boiling to the surface here.
Yeah, I agree completely. I love how Stackpole sets him up for you. Or it gives you this interaction with Gray and really gets you enough to know what motivates this guy, where he's going, enough to infer about what his past has been like. As you said, you can see he's a guy that wants to be a mech warrior through and through, but at this point he's working in Solaris as a mercenary, taking on contracts he might not even like.
Yeah. He also says he's primarily an information broker, right? That's his self-identity. He's like, I'm an information broker now. He shot Justin with them guns. He flipped him around and shot him. This is that guy. I can't believe it. He's pretty cool.
I like how this chapter leaves you a little confused on how to feel about that. It's like, okay, we got Justin set up. We love Justin. Here's the guy who cripples Justin, goes back to it, and it's really just business to him. It wasn't personal. It wasn't anything beyond that.
If anything, he feels bad a little bit about what he did, at least how it turned out. And you're just like, oh.
You don't really know what to do with the information.
Absolutely.
And how to process that.
You see the man's even kind of sad.
Yeah.
He has all this wealth.
He's a sad man. And we're not even done. He still has to meet another guy. He wasn't even here to meet this guy. He's here to meet another guy. So it's like, okay, we get like back-to-back, like nightclub meetings. You're like, all right. Now, it's like back to back. It's like two chapters. He's like, he talks to one guy, then another guy. I love it.
For the next meeting, though, we'll have to travel to another realm, to the Valhalla Club.
And we'll have to find out who awaits him in the Valhalla Club in the next chapter.
Chapter 6. So, we're still in Solara 7. We're still with Grey Noden. We're in the club. He leaves Shang back at the booth, and he goes back through all, like, past all the tables and stuff, and he takes this little, like, there's, like, a ramp, like a little catwalk out, because remember, there's, like, two clubs, and they're, like, connected, but he has to go over and, like, go up these stairs, and there's, like, a separate lobby, and he steps on this, like, pressure plate. There's this identity scanner, like, the ruby red beam, like, bzzz, and it's, like, welcome, Mr. Noden. I was like, oh, that's cool. And there's, like, this dark glass separating the two sides, and that prevented anyone from, like, watching. It's, you know, it's like this whole thing. It's this very clearly, like, oh, this is the, like, exclusive one, right? You're like, oh, cool, dude, the Valhalla Club, right? So he's strutting in there. He's like, yeah, dude, we're in the Valhalla Club. He is like, I wonder if anyone is anxious that I'm going to be here. As he's, like, walking in, he's like, I wonder if I'm going to cause some trouble. He's thinking, he's like, I think somebody might be upset to see me. So this is cool.
So we learned he's a bit of a controversial character. That's interesting.
Yeah, he's expecting to upset people. He says that when he goes in, basically.
Me too, man.
Yeah. So, like, it describes it visually. It says that it had been constructed as a Norse warrior's vision, right? Long and wide, whole room constructed from rare imported woods. It's got this very old Norse Viking kind of a situation. There's, like, holographic torches and, like, animal skins. They have a whole Viking thing going on. Or Brent, you tell me, what is this?
I've always pictured this, and this is me, I just assume we've got, like, this whole, like, reclaimed wood, like, from, like, a longship on, like, old Terra. Like, I just assume they've spared no expense, and you've got, like, all of this wood, and you've got all these shields, and it's all very rustic, very big. I'm assuming the lighting, you know, they described, like, torch lit.
Yeah.
Literal, like, torches on the wall. So you have kind of this, like, low red lighting throughout.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, for those,
like, this long table.
For modern context, I'm sure, like, this point, everyone's at least seen Skyrim. So
yeah. I didn't want to say Skyrim, because that's, like, such a, like, an uncultured.
But the reality is that, like, I think that, like, almost everyone that is listening to this can,
let's be easily honest,
more easily, I'm sure less people have gone to museums in, like, Scandinavian countries and more have played Skyrim. So I think we can just say, go into the companion hall in Skyrim, and I'm assuming that we're looking at something very similar, you know, long benches and booths. I'm sure that because there's nobles, that they probably couldn't straight up get away with these, like, long wooden benches being the only seating. So I'm sure these booths have some sort of padding and stuff, things that that make them more pleasurable to seat in.
Yes, the finest. Leather. Space leather. Also, we learned that they have this, like, whole system here where the best mech warriors sit up at the front, right? There's, like, a long table. It's like there's, like, this hierarchy, and it's like, it's best dudes, right? They sit up at the head of the table. There's, like, a dais and, like, a throne, and they're all arranged in, like, a hierarchy of skill. So the worst mech warriors, they sit down near the door, right? Over probably down by the bathrooms.
So everybody has to walk by them.
Yes, exactly. And also around the exterior, it's this big place. And all around the exterior, there's, like, these booths, right? These, like, private suite kind of situations.
It's interesting. So you get this, like, feeling almost of, like, the better of a warrior you are, the more privacy you are
granted. Yeah,
that's true. And so there's all these booths around it. And Gray's here, he's thinking about, most of them are like the noble houses, right? The stable owners. Over the booths are various like coat of arms of like the family or whatever. If these like, you know, it's all these noble houses, these stable owners, and like the occasional like champion mech warriors and whatnot. So it's like only like the richest. These are like very exclusive, right? If you like, oh, you have your own booth at the Valhalla Club. Not just anyone gets their own booth at the Valhalla Club.
I love how Stackpole opens this up for us. You start off in Midgard, which is just like, oh, this is where people can come in. This is the general population can come to Midgard. But then this is the area only the select few get to go to. They spared no expense, as we were talking earlier. And this whole place has its own life. That has its own rules. Yeah, all the details together make this place seem massive in the lore behind it. And I think Stackpole does an amazing job for it.
It has a weight to it, right? It's clearly this is like an important place, mm-hmm. even if it's loathed by some. I imagine that there is a cornucopia of emotions surrounding when you're a Solaris warrior and you've made enough wins to finally get in here. I imagine you're stoked, and then you realize you're just like on the lowest rung. This is like hallowed ground, right? There is a density and a weight to it, clearly. And I think what you're getting at is that without so many words, he really kind of gives you the show of it.
Yes, exactly.
He does. This is where we get that bit where he thinks to himself about how, you know, everyone here in the Valhalla Club, though, very prestigious, right? So good to be there. You work so hard. Everyone's here, all these competitors. He's thinking to himself, though, he's like, it's funny, though. Really, it's funny because they're all as good as dead. It's a dead end. You know, what are we doing here, though? He's almost looking around like, it's just so funny. Like all this prestige and stuff, but like all they're going to do is like, they're all just going to kill themselves in the end. Most of them die while doing this. And the ones who don't like retire or like whatever, like he's even like, not like me. I did it smart. I got out when I could. But not before, like, killing a bunch of dudes, actually. He does, there's a bit here, like, oh, he's, okay, you learn he has his own booth, right? And you're like, oh, dude. He has his own booth. You're like, oh, he's like a baller. Like, Gray mm-hmm. Noden, and we see he has, like, a sick logo. Okay, listen, okay? It says, okay, this is he's the legend killer. And he has a logo. It's like a ghost in like red crosshairs, right? It says that. It's like a cartoon ghost. It's like the Ghostbusters, right? But instead it's like crosshairs. That's what it looks like.
Who you gonna call? Legend Killer.
Gray Noten. He's got a cool logo, right? And he's known for piloting his riflemen, the Legend Killer. He's like, I spilled more alcove owners from their havens than anyone before me or since I retired. But now...
He gets very poetic about it.
He does. Yes. He's like having a moment. Yes, he's like, it's very like, haha. Now, as an information broker, I consort with royalty and spill leaders from their thrones. Haha. And I'm like, very good, Gray. Thank you.
We start to learn that. Maybe this is why he's so unhappy.
Yeah, he's all, it's like, hey, do you do this every day? Do you read? He's like in his head, he's like, he's kind of like, remember Gray. He used to be a mech warrior. So he gets to his booth and there's someone waiting for him, right? And you realize, oh, right, the person has come here to meet him, right? And he's like, okay, so he's meeting him at his booth in the Valhalla Club.
Which that immediately kind of changes the tone from the last meeting, is where Gray went and met him in Midgard, down below, but this person he's meeting is in his personal booth. Something to denote maybe a different status or a different level of reputation that this person's going to require.
Yes. We learn right away that this is the Baron von Summer, okay?
He's a Baron.
He's a Baron. So, and Summer is, that's like a planet in the Lyran Commonwealth, right? That's in the Isle of Skye. This is Enrico Lestrade, the Baron von Summer. Okay. And he's not alone. There's a woman with him, right? When Gray gets here, he goes in his booth and he's like, oh, the Baron is here. And so is his female companion, strikingly beautiful, blonde with ice blue eyes.
Contessa Kim Sorensen.
Yeah. Late of the Federated Suns. The perfection of her manicure. Her nail polish matches her eyes. It's great. We get this whole, it's like, okay, so there's this woman here. And she's got like a cool like outfit on. He's like looking at her clothes. He's like, oh, very fashionable. It's like clearly this rich girl.
She doesn't just have some thrown together wardrobe.
Yes.
She's clearly
exactly
a rich noble. And she clearly has an attention to detail. And so does our friend here. So does Gray Noten.
Yeah, she's cool. She's cool. But she goes, she's like, nice to meet you, Mr. Noten. And she goes to like slip away. She like starts to leave the booth and the Baron's like, my dear, where are you going? Puts his arm out. And she's like, please, you boys have business to discuss. She leaves.
So one of them can read a room.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, Noten just like, yeah, she leaves and he like closes the curtain, turns around and he's like, oh, private meeting, but you bring a woman with you? The Baron's like, what? You know, what's wrong? She doesn't know. I met her at a party. He's like, you met her at a party. It's like, she can't be a spy. Yeah, it's like, you know, no, Gray's just like, she could be like a spy. And she's like, spy? That's impossible. I met her at a party last night. She's like a rich girl. And Gray's like, are you
spies
serious?
Spies have never been rich girls. Yeah,
Gray, I think there's a moment where he literally thinks to himself, he's like, the stupid thing must be like an act, right? He's like, this guy, he's trying, he wants me to underestimate him. I get it. Because he's like, no, he's not this dumb. Because it's like, oh, this like attractive woman just met you at a party and then followed you into the Valhalla Club. It's like, it's just funny. He's like mad about it.
And this is what I mean, as in like, even though he didn't like his Capellan conspirator, right? But he at least respected him as someone who was competent and could do him harm. This guy, he has such disdain for this guy in every suitable manner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he only called one of them an idiot, so.
Yeah. Baron Lestrade, he's like, please, bored daughters of rich fathers. I can spot him a mile away. And I like, he brings up, he's like, she's a rich girl. You still driving that Typhoon? He brings up his whip. Remember Gray Noten? He has the Typhoon.
Gullwing doors, dude.
The gull
riding on a wisp of air.
And it's like, yeah, Sorensen Mechanicals. She's the heir to the Sorensen fortune. And you're like, oh, that's cool. They made his car. And also, like, while he's here, because when you're in the booth, you get like a little TV. It's like a holographic. It's cool. He pulls up that fight from Steiner Stadium, right? The one he got that Sean gave him the ticket for.
I like that he's doing this while this like nobleman is like explaining himself. Yeah. Like, oh, it's fine. Yeah. He's already over it. He's just flipping through trying to find what he needs.
Just like, yeah, he's like going through the fights. Like, oh, hold on. Like, where's this one? He even says he just skips. The fight starts playing and he's like, skip to results. And
which upsets the noble. The noble's like, oh, you're putting something interesting on. He's just like.
Yeah. But sure enough, one of those guys died. One of the Capellan mech warriors.
Payment is rendered.
Yeah, Sin Sheng was right. One of those guys died. And Gray's like, wow. All right. So Gray looks at the guy. He's like, all right, what do you want this meeting for? You come here, you meet me. We're hanging out at the club, popping bottles. It's cool. But what's going on? And this is where, and so the Baron like leans in, right? And he's like, okay, check it out. All right. Some people, and I like this. It points out that as soon as Lestrade starts talking, Noten thinks to himself, when he says some people, he's like, Duke Frederick Steiner and Duke Aldo Lestrade, got it, believe there might be ways of diverting a jump ship from a particular course. And so you're like, and then Gray immediately is like, no. He's like, stop right there. He's like, absolutely not.
He stops him for a reason that if you've read the Gray Death Trilogy, you kind of already know. Jump ships are kind of off limits. Right?
Yeah.
There's kind of a, and don't get me wrong, undoubtedly some skullduggery happens here and there, even in the Grey Death trilogy, if you remember in Decision at Thunder Rift.
Definitely.
There was some jump ship tomfoolery, but generally you don't F around with them.
You don't. Right. It's a, yeah, they, again, we get this little bit. Grey immediately protests, and he even brings up, he's like, you can't do that. No one would steal a jump ship. And he's like, especially since the Fed Suns began its anti-hijacking measures last year. And you're like, oh, okay. And Lestrade's like, wait, no. It's not a jump ship, okay? A drop ship, all right? We need you to steal a drop ship. And Noten's like, oh, okay, drop ship. He's like, maybe, you know, you can maybe. He's like thinking about it for a second. He's like, We get a little thing where he's like thinking about drop ship, where he's like, oh, yes, drop ships, right? Remember, they latch onto the jump ship, and then it's actually the drop ships that make the voyage down to the planet's surface. It usually takes like a week or so to get up and down, you know, or like a few days. It depends.
It depends right? on, yeah, right. Exactly. It depends on. Yeah. X, Y, and Z, all of the crazy, exactly. Like how far is the, you know, the zenith point of the star from whatever planet you're trying to get to, right? It could take quite a long time sometimes.
Yeah.
They dock onto these docking collars and undock and go land planet side.
Exactly. So like Noten's like, all right, it's possible. So what ship and where? The Baron tells him, look, I don't know yet. Okay. But the ship will be in the vicinity of Terra. Okay, and you can expect like a 2 to 3 month lead time on this. Okay, you know, we don't have all the details yet. You know, we're trying to figure it out. You'll have like 2 or 3 months to plan to get it ready. So, you know, what do you think? So Gray Nodens, he's like, all right, maybe. It'll be expensive though. It's gonna cost you. And this is where Lestrade, he like pulls out his little notebook and he's like, you know, like pay in advance. He wants to give him an advance of 60,000 C-bills at first, and Noten wants 85,000, and Lestrade's like, well, I'm only authorized to give you 60,000, and Noten's just like, get new authorization, you know, I love this.
Just like, he's like, that's not my problem, that's your problem. Exactly.
Not my problem. Tell him my cut of the operation will be 50,000 up front, and my people will want a balance of 300,000 C-bills upon completion, and Lestrade is just like, all the blood drained from Lestrade's face. And yeah, he's like, man, that's like way over budget. And Noten's like, no, it isn't. He tells him, he's like, no, it's fine.
No respect. He just no respect for this guy.
He does suggest, though, he's like, check it out. You can supplement the payments by collecting ransoms from the families of the passengers, right? Huh? Think about that. And I'm like, wow. I mean, okay. I guess the Baron's like, all right.
Noten's just like, however you get your money's your problem. I'm going to get my money.
So the Baron's like, all right, you drive a hard bargain. You can't guarantee anything. I'll pass your message along. But we get a thing. Noten does think to himself. He's like, all right, someone bound towards Terra that would interest this faction of the Lyran Commonwealth. We get a little bit of his prediction of what he thinks the job is most likely to be. He's like, it's probably a courier of some sort. Traveling between, he has good information, so he's like aware of the like alliance between the two houses, you know what I mean, how there's like this growing alliance, and he's like, okay, there's probably some kind of courier situation they need to disrupt. So yeah, Noten just stands up and he's like, okay, Baron, and he like opens up the curtain. It's like, you know, call me when you have some real figures to discuss, till then, and like gently but firmly like guides the man like out of his like little booth. Oh, I do love, yeah, so he like, you know, pushes him out before Noten can like slip back in. He hears like, hey, Noten, did you watch my fight? And Noten like turns around, right? And we see it's Philip Capet, dude. And he's like up there because he's the number one mech warrior, all right? He's like on his throne. Look at, check this scene rules. He's like up there on his like mech warrior throne. And you're like, oh, this is the dude that Justin kicked out. How funny is this? And he's just like talking trash. And oh, right. Yeah. He's like, no, did you watch my fight? And Gray, he tells him, he's like, no, Capet, if I wanted to see the sort of battling you do, I'd have to toss a C-bill in the street and watch the crippled orphans of Cathay scramble for it. And he's like, what? And
he just like, kills him in.
Yeah, he that kills dim, him. In, yeah, he's cooking.
By torchlight, right? Like yeah, by yep. torchlight, he's just yeah. dead.
Yeah, I was like, damn, he like slams his like flagon down. It says that he's like, my flagon, how dare you? And he's like, how dare I what, Capet? And he with this scene, he calls him a poser as well. And he's like, yeah, I watched your fight. You totally outclassed those Vindicators. You're the number one. That should have ended quickly. You played with them. He accuses him of fighting dishonorably. As well. He's like, yeah, that fight sucked. I thought you were a man. We get a description here. His curly salt and pepper hair was cropped closely to his scalp, but his bushy black mustache gave his visage a menacing, angry look. hooked nose, broken, jagged scar. Philip Capet, right? He's got a mustache.
I love how that description kind of shatters the image that Stackpole had given him previously, as we had the meeting in Justin's office where he's talking about the hero and the reasons why he got rid of him. And it, you know, he sounded more like a golden boy that Justin was able to see through and had the intelligence to get rid of. And then you get this image of him and he sounds like a beast.
He's like just a thug.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Bill. It's like Bill the Butcher type of dude. That's true. It's so funny. They're getting so snippy. Capet tells him he's washed up. You know, you're just washed up, Noden. I didn't toy with those Capellans. If I'm such a street baller, just come out and defeat me. You gone soft, old man. And Noden, right? He's just like, ha, that's the difference between us, Capet. You don't know when to shut up. You don't know how vulnerable you really are. Stay clear of me. If you don't, I swear that Legend Killer will be your death. And you're like, oh, God, they're like going off. It's popping off at the Valhalla Club. These dudes are like yelling at each other.
It's clear that like this guy, he challenged Noten and Noten knew exactly what he needed to do. Noten got real with him.
Yeah.
It was an empty threat.
It gets real.
Noten knew it was an empty threat, but he took it all the way. You can just imagine the silence of this place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, these two men are just like screaming at each other in the Valhalla Club.
It was kind of like a low roar, and now it's just kind of, it's quiet.
Everybody's just kind of like side-eyeing the conversation, and
yeah.
Capet comes in swinging, and Noten's like, hey, here's an invitation. You want to settle it? Because we can.
You going to bark all day, little dog? Are you going to bite?
He wanted it, though. He's the one who yelled it up. You see my fight? Capet's like, I saw your fight, loser. He's like, what? You're washed up. And he's like, you suck.
It's clear the way this was going because he was seeking validation from Noten, right? Yeah. And that colors this whole thing from the get-go.
Yeah. And it really parallels back to what Gray was saying earlier about the Valhalla Club, about how these guys are all caught in this loop that just ends in their death.
Yes.
And Capet's here sitting on the throne. He's still caught up with it. And
Noten thinks he's above it.
Gray shows him that it doesn't matter.
Right. It doesn't matter. But also, Noten is both simultaneously above the perceived BS, but also simultaneously not above it.
Absolutely.
A man caught in purgatory is what I would call Noten.
This is awesome, though. That's the end of the chapter, which is just, it just ends with these guys yelling at each other. And you're like, oh, okay. But we get back-to-back chapters with this character, Gray Noten. And we're like, okay, now we know Gray Noten. We've spent some time with this guy. It's like, this is like a whole new guy.
We learned that Justin went toe-to-toe with this guy whose name, his call sign is Legend Killer.
Legend Killer. This is the guy. He shot Justin.
And he's got a booth at the Valhalla Club.
He's got a booth at the club.
And you're just like, oh, man, Justin's lucky he made it out with just Sans arm, right?
Yeah, this is cool. Right. He's like, oh, this guy's literally like one of the best mech warriors ever. He's like legit like one of the best. That's true. This is cool. I loved it.
Absolutely. And I love how we have that setup with the Baron of like, we're going to have you steal a jump ship. Well, a drop ship. But that whole plan, to me, parallel, as I talked about earlier, the conversation Justin had where he talked about kicking out Capet. The reason was what Capet was planning to commandeer a jump ship.
Yeah.
And that I thought was very interesting that how we have these two guys square up at the end. And what we know about both of them is they were mentally on the same path there for a minute.
Oh, right. Good point. That's true. Because he was going to steal the jump ship. Oh, right. Oh, man. This book's so good.
Yeah. So I kind of, I took it as a parallel that.
Absolutely.
Bryn, as you said, this is a man caught in purgatory. And in this statement, as he squared up with Capet, he did it from a position where this man's nothing like me. But then Stackpole has drawn a parallel to say
exactly
they're really not that far away from each other.
Yeah.
Stackpole spares no detail.
Oh, yeah. No, and I thought that was brilliant. Throw that on top of these last two chapters, our introduction to Solaris. As a lot of people know, and people that are new, it's just huge. It's a huge thing in the lore.
It's a huge part of Battletech.
And this was an amazing introduction into it.
Solaris 7, dude. We made it. We're in the Valhalla Club.
Speaking of booths at the Valhalla Club, if you want to come chat with us or a lot of the other podcasts that have a booth at the Valhalla Club, you should check out the Valhalla Club Discord. We will have a link for it in the description. It's a fun place to hang out, and we hope we'll see you there.
Yeah, we have a great time hanging out in there, but we'll have to say goodbye to Solaris 7 and see where we pick back up in the next chapter.
Chapter 7, New Avalon, Federated Suns, 27th of December, 3026. So this takes place a little bit before these last few chapters. This takes place a couple days after Christmas. So we open with Justin Allard, right? He's in the hospital. He's been in a medically induced coma, okay? So we cut to the hospital, and when the chapter begins, he's just beginning to, like, regain consciousness, right?
I like the words Stackpole uses. Consciousness seeps into Justin Allard's brain drop by drop.
Yeah.
And then it's like, superimposed to, like, as the doctor slowly dialed 10 cc's of dexamethasone into the IV monitor. It'd be a perfect movie transition, right?
Yeah. You're right. The prose here, though, he does get a bit creative. Justin, for the first few paragraphs, we're in this like hazy fever dream. We get some pretty creative writing. You know, we're talking about Justin. He's just starting to like come to, and he's starting to like become aware of himself again. It's like he locates the pain. And from the pinpoint of awareness, he begins to remember that he's like in a body, and like random memories are flashing.
There's like a rifleman and its arms are going like behind it.
Yeah.
They're going behind it, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real nightmare. And the doctors, you see the doctors are here and they're watching like the brain activity increasing. And he's in like the sunken place, right? Eventually he becomes aware. He's like, oh, but he's like down there. He's like, yes, I'm alive. But it's like, how do I get back? But slowly he's like starting to regain. He's like, wait a minute. It smells like a hospital. Oh, I'm at the hospital. He's like, oh, I realize he can't see.
Oh, he's having what the kids are calling an out of body experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
The kids love saying that.
But he's returning to his body. Now he's coming back, and he realizes he has bandages all over his eyes, and he's like, oh no, like I hope I'm not blind. And it is sad, it's Justin in the hospital, but he's just returning to consciousness, and he's like, he's very upset, he's very stressed out. You know, he tries to pick up his arm and like flops over, and he's like, oh, what's wrong? Can feel it like against his chest. He's trying to like pull his like bandages off, and he hears a voice, right? Somebody tells him, stop, Allard, wait. He's like, oh, as soon as he hears another human talk, it really helps him like start to come to. He asks for water. You know, he's like, water, I need water. And they're like, drink it slowly, Major. You know, they give him a little straw. And he asked him, am I blind? And they tell him, no, you're not blind. You have bandages over your eyes. You've been in a narcotic coma. Okay, so, but, you know, we bandage your eyes. They're very sensitive. You know, he asks them, can you take them off? And they're like, no, we turn the lights down, you know, close the window shades. It's like, but your eyes are going to hurt. But yeah, and so they cut the bandages off, right? His eyes, like I said, they like hurt really bad because they've been covered this whole time. But eventually he starts to like, oh, yeah, I can see kind of. He's like, okay, cool. I have my vision. And he like looks at the doctor, introduces himself, Dr. James Thompson. And he's like, oh, thank you, Dr. Thompson. And the nurse is here. She's like, oh, this is Nurse Alice Forrester. And they're like, ah, yes, I'm Justin Allard. And they're like, we know who you are. He's like, oh, I can see. It's like, so, doctor, what is it you wanted to tell me? And then he sees the doctor like look down. And so Justin looks down. All right. And the chapter ends with, nestled like a viper in the sharp folds of the starched white sheets, Justin saw the blackened steel thing that engulfed his left forearm. You're like, oh, it's like a prosthetic arm. Oh, interesting. He realizes at the very end of the chapter that he's lost his arm. And it is. That's the chapter. It's just Justin regaining consciousness in the hospital.
I love the clearly Stackpole did his research here as to like patients' experiences and like how consciousness can be like this. And I love that it's this kind of weird intermission chapter where it's just kind of like Justin's floating in and out of trying to figure out who and where he is. And then it spends the whole time getting there. And once we get there at the end, it's all just to go, my arm. I think it's well done.
It's well done.
I agree. And I love that Stackpole keeps it short and sweet. Like he knows, as you said, it's an intermission chapter. We're transitioning. So it's 3 pages long. And it's just a check-in with Justin. But I also love how he handled Justin here.
It's also a bit of a reminder, right? It's Stackpole being like, we've been through a lot already. Let's kind of remind them about Justin real quick.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come up here in the next chapter. There's a lot of wisdom here in his choice to put this chapter right here.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Lets you, as the reader, check in, know where Justin's at and all of this. So nobody keeps on going and talking about his condition without you knowing exactly what's going on.
Right.
And I love how Stackpole also handles Justin here, where could have given this like your kind of cliche heroic waking up in the hospital, like, you know, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. It really keeps it more human.
I agree, Aaron. It's very human. He keeps it real human. I think to the reader, that's going to, for most people, make Justin much more likable, right? You're just like, oh man, Justin's clearly your insert here, right? You're supposed to be. And Stackpole's gone to great lengths in this little chapter to make you feel like you're this guy and to make you empathetic, like, oh, how would you feel being in his shoes? And he gives it to you.
Oh, and if you notice this chapter, I wanted to point it out at the beginning, this takes place on New Avalon, right? This is the capital of the Federated Suns. And the next chapter also takes place on New Avalon, but it's with a different set of characters, but we stay on New Avalon. And this is cool, right? This is the first time
we've been
on the capital planet.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I wanted to point that out. And we get to hang out here for a little bit. It's cool. I love this whole next section.
We'll just have to find out what's in store for us here at New Avalon in the next chapter.
Chapter 8. We're still on New Avalon. It is now the 8th of January, 3027. So it's a little bit later. It's like a couple weeks later, right? So this is the Hans Davion office scene, dude. So this one starts with, we got this guy, Quintus Allard. Okay. He like walks up to the big bronze doors and he like salutes the guard and he goes in. It's like this old guy.
He's a bit of a big deal.
He's got a rumpy suit. It says that he's got like an oversized green jacket, loose pants. He's like not a sharp dresser. He looks kind of like a professorly type of guy. I feel like it says that. So he goes in this office, right? The guard lets him in. We see sitting at his desk, Prince Hans Davion. Right? The sole and undisputed ruler of the Federated Suns. And he's at this massive antique desk, right? And he looks up and he sees Quintus come in. And he sees, it says, he's like, he notices that Quintus looks very upset. Okay? And he's like, oh no, has something happened? Has something happened to Justin? And you're like, oh, right, this is Quintus Allard. This is Justin and Dan's father. Right.
And the Minister of Intelligence, Investigations, and Operations.
Isn't that funny? You know, what are the chances? You know, that's crazy.
You just can't throw a dart in this room without hitting a character that's important to the plot. That's for sure. Not in this story, anyway.
Quintus, though, he's like, no, actually, Justin's doing well. The doctor released him a week after he came out of the coma. He spent the New Year's holiday with us. It's good. He's in physical therapy. He's doing all right. And so the prince is like, oh, okay. So if Justin is fine, what's wrong? And this is where he holds up this like hollow disk, right? With like a look of like disgust. He's like, this arrived. And also with a bunch of goons from the Capellan March came off the dropship. It's like a bunch of dudes. He's like, yeah, this disc showed up with a bunch of goons. He's like, from the Capellan March. And Honda's like, how'd they get here? And he's like, remember you
That's
set
a good
up-
question.
Yeah, he's like, remember you set up a command circuit to get Andrew Redburn Ooh. Here for like his ceremony or whatever. Yeah, command circuit. Brent, what's a command circuit?
A command circuit. I'm so glad you asked, Kanan. A command circuit is this wild, expensive idea. And it makes a lot of sense, actually. Joking aside, basically, you have a jump ship staged one jump away from each other. And so if you need to, in a jiff, get somewhere from one point in the galaxy to another quickly, which, remember, jump ships, they take 14 days to recharge after they've made one jump, with the exception of doing some hairy things and making two jumps, right? And so by having these all like staged in tandem, we can have a drop ship jump on one jump ship, then undock, redock to the jump ship that was at that point, and then subsequently jump, so on and so forth, until it gets to whatever the needed destination is. Exactly. Now, this is very expensive, right? You can just see the C-bills stacking up. This is not something that you do for no reason.
Yes. It says that they made the voyage from Kittery to New Avalon in 24 hours instead of 2 months. That's the difference it made. That's insane. That's crazy. I couldn't believe it.
But it means that a portion of your fleet has to literally be just hanging out.
Yeah.
Ready, like staged, ready to do this. And then the whole thing's got to recharge, right? Once you've used it, it's kaput for 14 days.
That's crazy. Actually, when you put it like that, that is such a, that's a lot of resources. Yeah, command circuits. Oh, and then of course he's like, and my prince, there's this, they have this disc. This hollow disc was recorded from a Comstar transmission. They brought it with them. Hans is like, he's starting to get mad. And now he's like, hold on. He's like, before let's play it, let's get Arden in here. And he like picks up the phone and he's like, somebody find Arden Sortek, get him in here. And you're like, oh, Arden Sortek. That's cool. So they're waiting on Arden. The prince does ask him, he's like, have you taken care of Michael's representatives? Michael's because, oh, remember, so Michael Hasek Davion is the Duke of New Syrtis, right? He's the ruler of the Capellan March, which is that's the section of the Federated Suns that's closest to the Capellan Confederation, right? It's kind of like they're broken into these larger regions, and it's like the first prince is the leader of kind of the middle section. And then you have like the Capellan March and this other guy, right? Okay, Michael Hasek Davion. And you know, he'd love to be first prince, right? That's this whole thing. It's like he would love to. They say, you know, first among equals, right? You know, first among equals. He's like, whatever. He's like, no, I want to be first prince, dude. Get in on that. So this is just a thing. He realizes like, oh, this guy has like duplicitous intentions and everyone knows it. Is what this scene establishes right away. Oh, so I was saying, the prince asked Quintus, did you take care of Michael's representatives? And Quintus smiles and he's like, oh yes, we have them in decontamination for the next 36 hours.
We learned that they quarantined them.
Yeah.
They used some red tape to slow this mechanism.
They got a bad dose of a flu vaccine. They got to run a full set.
Yeah.
And the prince is like, always, he's like, thank you, always best to be cautious. Yeah. And then, so this is where, right, this is like Arden Sortek comes busting in the room.
We see right away that Hans and the crew have no problems playing with the gray areas of the law.
Totally.
Especially when Michael's involved.
This comes up again. Oh, this is where Arden Sortek busts in the room, right? He's got like an arm full of folders. Goes out of the way. Arden Sortek. Okay, so this is Hans Davian's like best friend, right? This is his boy.
This guy's title is Knight of the Realm.
Knight of the Realm.
And his rank is Prince's Champion. He's Prince's the champion, champion, guys.
This is the guy. And he is like this all-American, grade A beef, like Giga Chad. Right, just so you know, like this is like yeah, Arden, like
this man makes a comb over look cool.
Yeah,
that's what kind of guy Arden Sortek is.
He's a hero, very charismatic. It's great. These two, they get up to so much. Oh, so here's what's so funny: Arden busts in the room. He comes strutting in, and he's just like, "What's Michael done now?" And Hans just laughs. He's like, "Ha ha, yes, see." I knew it. He knows it. Everyone knows it. And we get this bit. Quintus is glad to see Arden. And it goes into how this guy, Arden Sortek, he's this like military man. He's this like military minded, this like golden boy. But he's like, we get this bit where Quintus is thinking about how not that long ago, Arden Sortek managed to uncover and defeat a plot hatched by Maximilian Lau, leader of the Capella Confederation, to substitute a double for Hans Davian. And it was Arden Sortek who kind of like saved the day and like figured it out. There was like this whole adventure that
that's why he's the champion, alludes man.
To. You know? Exactly. This is clearly like, that's why he's the prince's champion. We learn Maximilian Lau at some point in the recent-ish past had temporarily replaced Hans Davian with a body double. This is Sword and the Dagger, right? This is the Sword and the Dagger, that book.
That book.
Yeah. There's a little like adventure here, right? This comes up again.
Indeed.
We do learn, I think, while they're talking about it, Michael Hasek Davian from the Capella March, he doesn't know about the body double. They did enough propaganda. They managed to like keep it all very hush hush. You know, it's not like some known thing. You know what I mean? It's really like the guys in this room, you know, they're like, you know, like he did with the body double. It's still like very hush hush. It didn't get out, right? But it did happen. Okay, temporary body double. No big deal. We figured it out. Arden saved the day. It's fine. I love this. They're like, all right, let's check this thing out. They put the disc in, right? I feel like everyone's like huddled around the TV. You know what I mean? And so it's this hollow vid. We see Michael Hasek Davian come up, you know, like a hologram of him. I like Sortek leans over and he's like, is it just me or is he looking more compelling every time we see him? And then Hans like looks over like pouty face, like, you can't believe that Michael might be talking to Lau, could you? And they're like, ha, 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 and they all start like laughing. And they're like, oh my God. Like they're just so open about it. Like they have his number. They're like, this guy's a narc. Everyone knows it. So anyway, they get this message, right?
You see, it's all politics, right? Yes. Since we set foot in this throne room, it's been nothing but politics.
And the burden that comes with it, especially for Hans.
Dude, this is great. These guys are so funny. So we see, right? Michael Hasek Davian, Duke of New Syrtis. He has long black hair in a braid that curled around and up his shoulder like a snake. This is a thing from their culture. They have like these long braids. It's like a warrior thing, I think. I've seen this before. He's kind of like a slithery kind of like looking dude. So, you know, he's got this message playing, you know, greetings, brother. Michael mentions Hans's bout with the Kintaris flu. And then you realize, this was their cover story, right? Like Hans kind of looks over at Quintus, and Quintus was like, yeah, you know, it didn't get out. It's like, the prince was just sick for a while. I thought that was funny. Like Hans looks over like, yeah, dude, my propaganda is like so good. But, you know, there's like a little greeting. Hope you're doing well. He goes on to basically like We acknowledge your anger with us because I didn't let you like use my guys. They had said that earlier that Michael had refused to like grant Hans the use of some of his troops. But then he's like, he gets down to it. He's like, how is it that you have yet to prosecute the traitor, Justin Allard, right? This man who has, you know, repeatedly betrayed the Capellan March. He's like, it's outrageous. And you realize, oh, this whole message is about how Michael sent this whole thing and all these goons just to demand that Hans Davian arrest Justin Allard for treason.
What's on this disc? Oh, more politics.
Yeah. It's like so crazy. And he's just like, you know, I feel like you don't even like the Capellan March anymore. The son of your own counterintelligence chief has betrayed us and you're just overlooking it. And of course he brings up that he dismissed Philip Capet, right? He's like, this is the guy, he dismissed a hero. He was a hero, Philip Capet. He just like let him go. He says he got attacked out there just doing his job. And then he goes on to be like, we have evidence. We have evidence that actually what happened was he was attacked by his Capellan allies on accident before he could identify himself. It was actually friendly fire, but he was actually the one leading them into a trap. We have evidence, not only that, like he repeatedly spent all of his time with the Indegs. This man is obviously a traitor. He must be arrested for treason. And you don't care about the Capellan March anymore. You're always hanging out with the Draconis March. And it's like we're not even friends anymore. And I'm mad about it.
Oh, but also your sister wishes you well.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. I want to say, he tells him specifically, if Justin Allard is not tried for treason, what are my people to think? You know how hard it is to maintain an empire when civil unrest saps you from within. I would hate to think that the kind of problems that plague the Free Worlds League might also befall you. And you're like, oh, he's threatening civil war, right? That's what doing here.
He's threatening without it being a threat, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's created this straw man.
Yeah. How are my people going to handle the evidence that I made up and gave them to present a very particular side of one person in the military?
But clearly Michael knows what he's doing, and clearly Hans knows what he's doing. Both men understand what they're doing and understand that they're going to catch each other's drift, right? Yeah.
Hans is mad.
Michael moved his chess piece. It is now Hans's turn to return the favor.
Exactly. He's mad, too. He's like, this dude, I hate this guy. God. But he's like, also, I do need his troops, though. I do. His military, it is, he's like, is he working with Max Lau? So, I mean, really, though, is he working with the Capellan Confederation? He's threatening civil war. Could he even do it? Quintus is like, no, it's just an idle threat. He doesn't know. The people don't really respect him. It's fine. Arden is like, Quintus is right, but he could, you know, have a lot of influence. He could create a lot of resistance with the thing. We'll get like spread too thin. He is like, yes, Arden's like, he could like cause us some trouble. It probably would be quite troublesome if he became significantly less cooperative, right? That is why they're a little irritated, because they make it clear, like, we actually do require his cooperation for things to go smoothly. That's what's so irritating about this, right?
Right.
Like,
he's just important enough.
And that's what that's why he's playing this hand.
Yeah, he's got some power.
But they don't think he's being influenced by Capellans, and I would argue that the other thing that backs that up, we don't get the idea that Michael is the brightest man. He's certainly not stupid, but maybe not the brightest. And if you recall, he does believe the propaganda about Hans's illness, right? And so that would be a sign for me, if he was aware of the body double, that would be more suspect of his allegiance to the Capellans.
Oh, good point.
Yes. Absolutely.
Hans asked Quintus if they have any confirmation of Michael's dealings with Maximilian Leal. But Quintus tells him, he's like, no, just suspicions. We don't even have any like time slots, no like reported absences or anything like that where we think he could have slipped away. I like, even Hans is like, reported absences. He could have been off. And then Quintus, you know, they're just like scheming. Quintus is like, maybe Max made a body double. Then he could have slipped him in. They're just like, that's possible. I don't know. No, no body double. No, probably not. Arden cuts in like, guys, I don't need proof. All right. I just know. All right. This guy's a narc. All right. We don't need, it's like, come on. We all know it. This guy sucks. We all know it sucks. And they just kind of stand there. This is when like Hans looks over at Quintus and he's like, Quintus, I got to ask this. What are the chances that your son's a spy? I like, Swartek gets mad at him. It says he like looks at him like, bro, how can you ask that, bro? Come on. And Hans is like, nah, it's cool. Quintus, he doesn't seem to be offended. He's like, he actually looks down. He's like, intelligence officer.
He ponders the question sincerely. Yeah.
Natural command of the tongue, appreciation for the culture. That's okay. That would work. It'd be easy for the enemies to co-opt. I don't know about it. He's like, honestly, he's like, I don't know. I'd have to look. I got to run some reports. I got to talk to some guys. I'll get some paperwork together. It's funny. He doesn't even give him. He's like, it would require a deeper investigation.
Basically. And that's why we learn that he wears the pants that he does. He's like, yeah. I'm going to take this seriously, even though it's my own son.
Yeah. Nothing personal about it. Just he's doing his job at that moment.
Yeah. And so this is when Hans is like, he's like, I know you're doing your best, Quintus, but we get this scene right here. He's like, it seems, gentlemen, we agree. Michael Hasek-Davion wants to take my place, and I believe he'd league himself with the devil or Max Leal to do so. He's like, both of you know how much I'd like to pay back Max Leal for that little trick he played on me when he put a body double here on my throne. He paused then, and the dramatic effect was not lost on his two visitors. This is what I mean. This dude is like, he's like so dramatic, right? Hans, he's just like stops and he's like, yes, my friends, I think we can use Michael to get at Max himself. And you're like, oh, he's going to play him. He's going to try to play him.
You did a little John Wayne there. And I really do get a little bit of John Wayne energy from Hans Davion.
He's got this all-American kind of strapping high school quarterback energy going on. You know what I mean? He really does. Yeah, they're like, you know, all the boys are like, yes, let us begin. They're like going goblin mode. They're like ready to go off. And like the last thing, right, they're like, Hans is like, okay, so we're going to feed Michael the troop figures and locations and movements to show him. We're going to feed him the information he wants, right? We're going to give him all the numbers he wants to see. Me and Quintus, we're going to do a little bit about, a little bit of homework. And we'll just leave it at that. And you're like, oh, dude, let's go. And that's it. That's the end of the chapter. We're just hanging out with the prince and they're just scheming. And it's just like this, like space opera, like, political. I was like, oh dude, this book rules. How cool is this?
This has a completely different flavor, right? We've been talking about the Grey Death Legion for so long. This is different. We're in New Avalon. We are literally hearing it from the horse's mouth. We're like listening to Hans Davion speak and take action. And he's been confronted with a political problem, someone challenging him for the throne as politely as one does such a thing.
It's like brother-in-law.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's very medieval, right? It's like this dude is married to Hans's sister and he's like trying to steal his seat at the table. Like,
unbelievable.
It's with the demand,
the disrespect
that makes a lot of sense too. Where Michael comes in, and I mean, if you really break it down, where he's like, you know, Justin Allard needs to be arrested. By not arresting him, you're showing a careless disregard of the Capellan March.
Yeah,
and all this plan feels like Michael knew that this would cost him nothing.
Right,
like there wasn't anything at stake.
He was just chucking a snowball. He was just like,
he didn't even pay for the transportation.
I can throw this because I can.
Yeah, they literally hitched a ride. They just showed up.
And Justin's just like, this man doesn't give a shit about Justin. It was just the man that he could throw under the bus to like cause this problem. And and the extra problem aligned with it, because clearly Michael understood that this is Quintus's son, right?
Yep.
Yes.
It's a strike right at Hans's cabinet. So
what a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy sucks. That's what you that's what we take away from this chapter. Is like, oh, that guy sucks, dude. Like, no one likes right this away. Guy. Yeah, no one likes this guy.
No.
All my homies hate Michael Hasek Davion.
Instead of these guys, the head of the state dealing with like real problems, they're dealing with this hack, right?
Yep.
Oh, what a waste.
And credit to Stackpole here. Normally when an author makes a character with a self-name insert, they're pretty heroic or cool. Not somebody you instantly dislike. So, yeah, for our first taste of throne room politics and Battletech, this was a good one.
Yeah.
I agree.
Makes it interesting.
We'll have to see where it goes.
It feels like the heroes of the previous generation, and this is like what they're up to now.
That's a really good point, though. We really are, though. Fun fact, these books are kind of set up that you would have, at the time, like when these books came out, it was kind of expected that you had read the House books, right? Which are these set of source books outlining all of the great houses. And they have all these stories of these people, you know, and that's where you would have learned about Arden Sortek and Hans Davion and Quintus Allard all for the first time. And so it's funny, but this is actually kind of a bit of fan service in a way, because these books are kind of ushering in a new era of Battletech, actually, just for some context overall.
That's true. That's a, yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a cool setup. We feel like we're getting somewhere. You're like, oh, let him cook. All right. You know, I was like, okay. I feel like he's just getting started. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. We got some political intrigue too. All right. We got body doubles, grudges, demands for, he wants Justin arrested. Man, unbelievable. But yeah, I guess we'll see. All these guys are here.
Sounds like things might start heating up in the Capellan March.
Also, remember, Michael's got all his goons here. They got him in quarantine, but like not forever. Right. So eventually, like, his goons will be unleashed on New Avalon. And we got like a whole situation. I love this.
It's also interesting from a literary standpoint. Right. We've learned where the plot's going next from all of these other characters. It's like Justin's in a bed.
Yeah.
We just left him. His brother is on some backwater world. And it's like, okay, we had all these setups, right? And the tension's kind of been dismantled. Justin is fine. We are worried about the whole arm thing, right? And then you get almost like this third party involved. And it's like, oh, this is where the plot goes from here. You see, this lord of the Capellan March is like, hey, you're going to try this guy for treason or else we're going to cause problems. And we're doing this because I want your position and I want to make you look bad. And I'm going to play your hand. I'm going to make you put your head of intelligence, son, on trial. It's going to make your whole regime look bad.
Yeah.
Right. And legally, you have to go along with it. And it's your problem now. And you're just like, oh, okay. So now we know that the tension isn't resolved, right? Like, not everything is not okay. This bunch of old guys can't do anything about it. If they can't make something happen, Justin's got a canumpence coming his way. A canumpence he doesn't deserve, but a canumpence nonetheless.
All this falling around Justin because he took a flock of stingers out for a walk. And we'll have to see where Justin winds up in all of this in the next chapter.
Chapter 9. We're still on New Avalon. It is the 10th of January, 3027. Okay, this is interesting. I love that we get these dates now. Okay, so the meeting in Hans's office, that was the 8th of January. Okay, so remember when in Chapter 4, when Dan Allard gets the news about Justin and the scenes with Grey Noten on Solaris, those take place on the same day, and this takes place 5 days before that. All right, so we're jumping around, so we're almost caught up to, like, what we've seen before. I just wanted to point this out. I like this. I just think this is cool how we're, like, I keep paying attention to the dates, and I'm, like, rewarded for, like, kind of, like, putting it all together. But anyway, we're back on New Avalon, okay? Justin's on New Avalon. Still, you know, this is where they took him when he was injured. This is where, when he woke up in the hospital, he was on New Avalon. So he's out here. He's in this cool, like, we get this scene, right? I do like the visual. He's in this, like, solarium with, like, and he's, like, out here, and he's doing, like, his Tai Chi moves. But, like, he has the synthetic arm now. He's doing the Tai Chi, and he, like, grabs the towel, and, like, the doctor comes up, right? You know, it's like, oh, I was watching your exercises. What do you think of the arm? Justin looks down and he's like, stupid arm. Like, it's lifeless. He hates it. He's still really mad, right?
He goes hard on it, though. He's like, I hate this dead, unliving, like, piece of trash. It's some real, like, Anakin Sand situation, you know? He's just like, the stupid arm. I hate it.
It only does, like, 10% of what a normal arm does. It doesn't help me at all.
It is funny. So he's like, yeah, I've been working with the elbow to try to get the fingers going, doctor. You know, I'm trying to get the wrist. He's like, but don't worry. It's going to be great. It won't be long before I've regained total control. And he's like, kind of like in denial. The doctor has to be like, Justin, it's never going to work like that. Like, listen, I know that we have pretty good prostheses yet, but
without any of those nerves, there's no way to get good articulation, right? They can't just magic their way through it. They need things to hook on to in order to get better articulation.
Exactly. And yeah, Justin's like, no, it'll be fine. No, doctor. He's like, I'll just push myself and like, I'll like regain control and I'll be back in the mech. You'll see. And the doctor's like, no, I'm sorry. Like, I keep telling you, man, the damage, it's like really sad.
Yeah.
Justin's like, No, I'll put in the years, whatever it takes. I'll do the Tai Chi. You can put in the hard work. You'll eventually regain some motor skills. You'll never be able to play the piano, but you'll be able to pluck and eat a grape. And I look,
it's like,
yeah, it's so funny. He says grapes. I'm like, oh, the last book we read had a man plucking a grape and smashing it. Remember? And I'm like, I think it's like, oh, we're back to grapes. That was funny to me. I'm like, grapes again.
Battle grapes, the battle tech fruit of choice.
Yeah. It's like, oh, grapes again. You know, we're still talking about grapes. I'm sorry. I was like, oh, we're grapes. It's just, we just talked about grapes. So anyway.
It is a weird choice for the doctor to be like, you won't be able to play piano, but you could feed yourself a grape at some point. It's like, it's not really the inspiring message.
Look, I don't want to get, look, so the doctor, you know, so like, yeah, the doctor's like, look, it's going to take some time. And Justin's like, why don't you just tell me what you want to say? Just tell me I'll never pilot a mech again. You know, and the doctor's like, because it's not true, Justin. Don't tell me about training and all this. I don't want any part of it. Without a mech, I'm nothing. I'll feel so useless. All I've ever wanted was to pilot a mech. And then the doctor's like, I told them that over in biomechanicals that you're the right choice for that arm. And Justin's like, what? And the doctor's like, does the expression lab rat mean anything to you? And he pulls out this little, says it's a black plastic rectangle, right? It's like this little thing, 15 centimeters, capped by a clear lucite. It's this little like data chip, right? It's interesting. It just describes, it's like, oh, it's like a little dongle that goes in something, some kind of weird little thing. And like the doctor's like, you know what this is? And Justin, he's like, oh, this is like one of those, they use these as like remotes for mechs, for like minor mechs and stuff. This is like a mech controller type of thing. And the doctor's like, exactly. They use tight beam broadcasts, and it's like this whole thing. He explains, like, check this out, though. This one we modified to work with a battle mech. He's like, we even modeled it on a Warhammer. And I'm like, oh, cool, nice. If you're gonna model your like thing, you know, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. The Warhammer, it has like a variety of weapons and stuff. It's like a good like starting point. That's true. And so check this out, right? The doctor's like, all right, He takes Justin's arm, pulls the fingers and like unlocks it. It's cool. He like snaps the wrist back, and Justin, you see he has like a little cable inside of the like prosthetic arm, right? And the doctor pulls it out and he connects it to this little remote control thing, right? So this thing has like a little display on top of it, right? The doctor explains that it can read your like mental inputs, right? And so what we're going to do is he's like testing to see if it'll like interface, basically. He's like, the idea is that this thing can like transmit your brain's messages to manipulate the muscles, like using, it's almost like it's taking advantage of like a you know, like phantom limb syndrome, right? It's like using
it's like
that
a wireless
to its advantage.
Signal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like,
because your brain has to, it uses the nervous system to transmit electricity to your fingers to let them know, hey, you're going to do this. And so really they're trying to cut out the middleman here, and they're just going, when you think that thought, hopefully we'll be able to catch that signal of that transmission.
It's like for testing. Note is though, this is like a diagnostic device. So they're testing. It says like, oh, when you like think about like using the same fingers that you would to like shoot the trigger or pull it back, when you like do it in your mind, it should be able to like interface with your nervous system and like register the motion. And they test it. Think about having your hand manipulate a joystick, right? Think about it. And they're like watching the display, and they totally do. It takes a while, but he like, he makes the little arrow move, and it's like, oh, dude. And then the doctor's like, well, no, it's funny because Justin's like, oh, it's going pretty slow, but it's working. And the doctor's like, slow, bro. He's like, there are colleagues at the like NAIS who didn't think you'd be able to get it to move at all. This is insane.
We didn't even know if it was going to work till you just did it.
You feel like it's just Justin's will is like so strong, right? He just, it works because he wants it so bad.
I think it's a little bit of that, but also I like to think that a mech warrior would already have this built in. That neural helmet is linked to your head, and you're kind of using it to naturally keep that mech's equilibrium up, right? I feel like this is just like a step forward of that. And so the fact that he's able to like pretty quickly, not master it, but kind of like accomplish doing this makes sense, because he's kind of, in a way, already been practicing for years.
Right. Good point. Yeah, with the neuro helmet. Yes, of course. They do interface with the machines. Okay, so it is funny. So Justin manages, right? So like the little red arrow was from him. He was thinking about moving the joystick or like moving the crosshairs around. And then immediately, of course, he's like, okay, how do I like shoot stuff? And the doctor's like, come on. Like, oh, hey, you know, it's like, what is it with you guys, huh? Just want to shoot stuff. He's like,
we put you back together and you just want to destroy things.
Exactly. The doctor's like, look, check it out. Remember, Warhammer control, okay, three thumb buttons, okay? Center operates PPC, all right? You press that, you get the blue light. Left thumb, medium laser, that's green light. Right thumb, it launches the SRMs. That'll give you a yellow light. And you're like, oh, cool. We get a little description of like the Warhammer controls, dude. He's trying to get it to like interface that he's like used his fingers to pull like specific triggers, right? And we'll see if we can get it. And it's like, okay, so, and so it's funny that like the doctor gives him a rundown. This button's this, this one does that. If you press this, and Justin's like, okay, let me try. And he like hits all of them. It's like, he like hits all of them in like a row. And the doctor's like, let's go. He starts like screaming. He's like, yo, he's like, actually chill out. Hold up.
I feel like the doctor's like knocking paperwork off. Just like, what?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, he's dropped the clipboard. Yeah, it's like he literally tells him like, whoa, dude, don't burn it out. Never mind. You know what? Hold on. He's like, this is great. Justin's like, thank you so much, doctor. This gives me hope. We get this incredible, like, triumphant moment where they're like high-fiving, like, I can't believe it, doctor. And he's like, this represents generations of like medical research. People are going to be getting like prizes and stuff for this. Like, people are going to be getting scholarships.
Yeah. For some reason, the way you said it, I was like, oh, they're going to get like like little stickers, you know?
Yeah, no, it's like scholarships and stuff. You know what I mean? It's about, this is like a big deal. And they're like having this moment of victory. And then like, they're like high fiving. And then like some dudes in like black and tan riot gear, like kick in the door, and they have like visors and stun sticks. It's like some goons.
In the movie, they clearly like up the volume on like the boots, like hitting the ground in synchronicity.
And then behind them, we get a cadaverously thin man. It says that. I'm like, not this guy with the goons, a cadaverously thin man with the wisp of hair, hands clasped behind the back. And he's like Major Justin Zhang Allard. And Justin's like, wow, hitting the Zhang pretty hard, bro. And he's like, dang. And then he's like, oh, come on, you know me, Count Vitios. And you're like, oh, this is Count Vitios. Yeah, what made you crawl from under this rock?
He's a count. You know,
from the safety of the Capellan March. And you're like, oh, this is one of Michael's guys, right? Michael sent this guy. This is Count Vitios. All right. And the doctor gets in on it. He's like, I'm the doctor. This man is my patient. You need to leave right now. But Vitios is like, you know, he's got his goons. And he like tells him, he's like, restrain him or remove him. And then, you know, Justin's like, off me. What do you want, Count Vitios? Leave him alone. Get my father. And then he's like, the count's all evil little chuckle. That's what it says. He's like, ha, ha, ha. Not be able to help you, Justin Allard. And he's like, oh, he calls him a malignant dwarf. Yeah, Justin's like, what are you talking about, you malignant dwarf? And then the chapter ends. The count smiled for the first time in Justin's memory. In the names of Prince Hans Davion and Duke Michael Hasek Davion, it is my duty and distinct pleasure to place you under arrest for treason.
What a chapter end.
Whoa. It's like, oh, is he going to get arrested? And you're like, oh, is this like a future plot point? No.
Yeah.
Immediately. He gets arrested. Yeah. Like he does.
Yeah. The last chapter kind of leaves it up in the air if it's going to happen or not. Like, it's like, oh, well, there's a lot of movements that are going to happen here in the future. And it's like, next chapter, Justin has a worse time than he's already had.
Well, I would actually, there's something important that happens here. Justin regains hope.
Yes.
And it's just in time.
It's just in time
to be like confronted with another problem. But I just want to say this. He gets just what he needs to deal with this next problem, right? Because if he hadn't had this, I feel like his reaction to getting arrested for treason would be much different, right? Yeah. Justin now has something to fight for, where previously Justin, for all intents and purposes, felt probably at one of the lowest points of his life.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that, right? But I'm just saying,
he did say that he was nothing without being a mech warrior.
Exactly.
And that's where he was at.
Becoming a mech warrior isn't just a walk in the park. It takes years and years of training. Training that probably starts at a very young age.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're like, not even just like
Grayson, dude.
Formal training.
Remember Grayson?
But like also just like learning about mechs. And as a child, it's likely you had an interest and a dream, right? And he's done all of this hard work to get there, only for it to be taken away in this horrible accident. Isn't really quite the right word, but in this combat. And he was at a low point, and he just, like, literally Stackpole was like, here's the hope you need.
Yep.
Because you're gonna have to fight again. And I think it was well executed. He knew what his character needed, and he gave it to him.
I agree completely. I will say, though, when I did first read it, I thought, what an unhinged way for the doctor to tell Justin about the prototype program.
Yeah.
Where he's like, listen, Justin, you might be able to eat a grape one day. Let's not get our expectations up. And Justin's like, well, I guess so. I guess that's all it is for me. He's like, just kidding. You see a USB drive before?
Yeah, check this out.
And it's like, you're the right man for the job. It's like, Justin's just sitting there like, was there doubts about that?
I didn't tell you.
I mean, I imagine at a certain point as a medical professional, in my experience, the people that are at the top of places are eccentric. So I'm going to give it a pass, even if it's just what we needed for the audience to get a little like bit of a like, haha.
Yeah, it gave moment. It gave it a cooler reveal, but it's like he walks out there and he's like, hey, Justin, how's the arm? I see the Tai Chi's not as smooth as used to be.
He's borderline like, hey, clunky arm, how you doing today?
How's that T-Rex grabber we gave you? And then he just pops out.
You ready to feed some fish?
Yeah. He just could have like walked out and been like, hey, I've got really good news. We've got a prototype program here that might add a lot of more functionality to this arm.
But
no, he wanted to get that great bit out.
I think we can all agree that this is a much more exciting way to go about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yes, it is in stark reality a little unhinged.
Poor Justin.
It's getting wild, though. It's like, oh, no, he got his arm blown off. Now he got arrested. It really is. This is like he's having a bad time. I feel so bad for him. He's so cool, too.
Yeah. But taking what's going on with Justin and in these couple chapters we covered here, we really got some distance with them. I mean, all the way starting in Solaris, going straight over to Justin just wakes up in a quick little like palate cleanser. Straight into throne room politics, back to the arrest of Justin. I mean, this moved. Stackpole got
it
this
feels
thing.
Like we're at a sprint.
Yeah.
And it's all this, and it's like, I feel like every character, even the Doctor, who is maybe the least fleshed out individual that we've met along the entire way, he's a bit faceless, Dr. Thompson. And even he, like, through the dialogue, you're even able to get a good idea of who he is. And Stackpole doesn't waste any time.
No.
No.
He gets his steps in each chapter. He's moving. But even though we are going through at that pace, you're not getting lost in any of it. Like, Stackpole calls attention to what he needs to call attention to and leaves enough there for the reader to infer anything else that they need and then keeps it going, but in a very understandable and concise way.
That's right. It's very legible, right? It's
yeah.
Like there's no sharp edges. So, Aaron, what do you think? Well, if you were going to... So you've only read up to Chapter 9, correct?
Yes. At this point, yes.
So... I'd love to hear your predictions. Where do you think this train's heading?
Well, we got a lot of irons in the fire right now. We've got the arrest of Justin, the immediate one that we just talked about, which I assume will bring a trial or something. Justin's going to have to mount a defense here. So we're going to go through that. We've got Hans and Michael's interactions. And I have a feeling that through the defense of Justin will be part of the plan for Hans and Quintus to unravel some of the plots of Michael. And then we have the wild card in this, which is Noten and the dropship heist. To me, if I was to make a flat out prediction at this point, is that the dropship heist is going to have information on it to further throw gas on top of that's the fire true. That is lit between Hans and Michael and everything that's going on, catching the Allard brothers inadvertently in the middle of all this. And they seem like the two people you don't really want in the middle of this if you're doing scheming and plotting.
Interesting.
We'll have to see. But Stackpole does a good job as a reader and only being this far into it to say, like, I've put it all out for you. I've put a lot of this in. I'm going to give you more as you go through. But I'm not going to give you everything you need to see everything that's going to happen.
And that was my point in asking you this, is that I think you can see, if you're scrupulous, I think you can see just over the horizon and nothing more.
Yes.
It seems like Michael only telegraphs what he wants to.
Yeah.
And that's very skillful as a writer, and I just wanted to appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree completely. I am having a lot of fun, and I want to keep reading on to these next couple chapters. I can't imagine when we get to, because next week we're wrapping part one of On Guard.
Yes. Okay, me
that,
too.
I think Stackpole's, he's going to keep some things up his sleeve
okay.
to make that end of the part hit hard. So I'm excited to see what that's going to be.
Yeah, we're getting heated up. We're just getting started. We haven't even hit our stride yet.
Me too.
Yeah, I love it.
That was very interesting.
Very excited. Justin got arrested, dude. It's heartbreaking.
The bun is in the oven.
You hate to see it. You hate to see it, folks.
And we'll have to see what Stackpole has in store for us. We get back into it next week.
This was Of Mechs and Men. I am Kanan Hill, joined, as usual, by my two friends, Brent and Aaron. We would like to thank the author, Michael A. Stackpole, and, of course, all the other writers and artists who work so hard to keep Battletech alive. And we'd like to thank, as always, Catalyst Game Labs for being such generous stewards of the property. We have an email address, advice@heat.management. Please, if you have any questions, concerns, corrections, the email is advice@heat.management. We're on social media, Twitter, Instagram, @ofmechsandmen. And please, feel free to message us on there as well. We also have a channel on the Valhalla Club Discord, where, and yes, please feel free to message us whichever way you would prefer, social media or email, please. We would love to hear from you. As always, if you'd like, please give us a review, a rating on your favorite podcast app. Everything helps. This was great. Thank you so much. We will be returning in the next episode to finish part one of Warrior On Guard by Michael A. Stackpole. Yeah, until then.
Remember, kids, don't be like Capets. Remember the quote in Top Gun by Stinger. Don't let your ego write checks your body can't cash.
Thank you.
Till next time.
Say a lot.